In part one of RSN Central's Your Story with Nick Ryan, he told us of that magical moment when he finished third in the Melbourne Cup.
And then to be beaten by Mackay Bidiva and Vinnie Rowe, probably the two best stayers in the world at the time, or if ever. So, yeah, it was that was a very big buzz.
He also explained about losing the battle with his weight.
I'd had a few incidents, sweating in saunas and baths. There was a couple of times where I'd sort of passed out and ended up in hospital. I was on drips and I just really struggled. I think the last time I was sweating with Luke Curry, we're in the spa, and I got out and dropped and ended up in hospital. And the doctor saying, enough's enough. Pull the pin.
And in part two, we start the conversation on how he reignited his love for the sport.
Probably being on their backs again. Yeah. It's a good buzz, bit of adrenaline, just good fun. And, you know, Brett's a good mate of mine, but he's a very interesting character. Yeah. He's good fun. And at that stage, he's got four kids and... They were good kids, and I was bunking in the house next to them. And they took me in as one of their own, and I think the first couple of weeks, Brett gave me a crash course on how to break a horse, and he said, "There you go, there's 10. So if I have a problem, I'll just give him a shout, and he'd be down the round yard. Yeah. So he was very instrumental for me getting me back to where I am today.
What did you learn about the horse when you came back to the sport than say you did when you were riding all of those winners as a kid?
Oh, look, you know, there's a big difference in being a jockey and a horse trainer and knowing about horses and treating horses and looking at a horse and identifying a good horse or a fast horse or a slow horse, and just being around them 24/7, and you learn stuff every day. And I think coming from breaking in at Brett's has sort of held me in good stead. Sort of dealing with a lot of younger horses and educating them and teaching them to do things right, and then B, with problemed horses and whatnot, and then problems with horses, how to treat horses, or just a lot of stuff that I learned in my 3 or 4 years with Brett was, it's held me in good stead.
So when you work with a trainer like Brett Kavanagh, and he's got a wonderful reputation as you point out, just a terrific horse person, when you work with horses and you become a trainer like you have, and you're a very successful trainer in the early part of your career, is it something that you can learn from Brett and other trainers, or do you think that you need that natural instinct with them as well?
Oh, I think you certainly need that natural instinct. It's like anything. You probably either got it or you don't. Yeah. And sort of I was lucky I can ride a horse and I can sit on one's back and I can identify when one can gallop and when one can't, and one's got a good action or one makes a noise or one does this or one does that. That's just natural. And then the other things come.
Yeah. You mentioned before that you saw Peter Moody's horses arrive there at Brett's when they were breaking in, and he was flying. He was the country's best trainer. He trained Black Caviar. And then you're telling me before that you were working in construction, but you couldn't go any further because you were on wages and that was your gig. Did you have that inspiration? What inspired you to become like, I want to be the best trainer I possibly can, and I want to get to Melbourne and I want to be the best?
Well, funny you asked me that, because I'd never at one stage did I think I would be a horse trainer, even probably when I was breaking in for Brett. But I was sort of really enjoying the breaking in. By second or third year I was working for Brett, I was breaking in 100-150 horses a year with Brett and a few of his staff, and then I thought I brought my stepdad and I brought a 2 yearlings, I think it was, and I thought, or just one day I thought, well, let's see, I'll get my license and I'll educate a few and we might sort of trade them, or, you know, trade horses, see if they're any good, or overseas, this and that. And then I got one. He was by four play, end up racing him. He won 3 on the trot. And it sort of just snowballed from there. I had a couple of unraced horses that were going quite well, but I wanted to bring them to Melbourne to trial them against some better horses to sort of line them up and see how they were really travelling. And I remember I came to Caulfield, John Sadler gave me a couple of boxes, and I was going to trial them there. And they trialed, went well, one got sold. And then the other one I kept, that horse's name was Beau Garçon. He won three on the trot, Yarra Valley twice, and I forget where else he won. And then one morning, I was at that time, Sads was in the barn next to Kieran Maher, and I think Kieran was short one day, and I was just walking around. He said, "What are you doing?" He jump on this thing, so I jumped on that and rode one for Kieran. And then I was about to go back to Albury, put the horse in a truck, and Kieran said, what's your plans?" I said, "No, I'm packing up and going back to Albury." He said, "Why don't you hang around and ride some work for me? I'll give you a couple of boxes and you can train them." I said, "Oh, sounds good to me." So for the next 12 months, I worked for Kieran, and at this time, Kieran wasn't as big as what he is now, but he had a great team with the likes of Jamaica, Petit Falou, Shrikandi, all these horses. So I think the 12 months I had with Kieran really has held me in good stead too, just working with him, because I got to ride a lot of these good horses and I learnt a lot off him, how he operates, and he's a very good trainer.
He's an interesting man, Kieran Maher.
He's a very interesting character.
He's had so much success, and he's only relatively young. I think he's touched 40, hasn't he now, Kieran? But he wouldn't be any older than 40. But what did you learn? What did you learn most about the life as a horse trainer, spending time with Kieran Maher?
Well, he's a very laid back individual, which I think is holds him in good stead. But he's a guy that's got it. He can look at a horse and he knows what it needs, what he needs to do with it, where he wants to take it, and he'll get it there. He's not one that trains out of a manual or a book. He's very naturally gifted.
When did you realize then, okay, then so you spent 12 months with Karen, I want to really make this my career. I want to make sure that I give this a really good crack. When
Yeah,
was
I think it was, you know, when I was with Kieran, I was, you know, it was the year Jamaica won the VRC Oaks, and just being around Kieran and seeing what he was doing and the success, and you know, I think that drove me to wanting to sort of have a real red hot crack. So we went and I brought a few more horses at yearling sales, and you know, we're just buying cheap horses, and slowly started to grow, and then I sort of started to get a few numbers around me, and then I said to Kieran, I was as Kieran was growing rapidly, and I already had two or three boxes. I was just getting a bit big, and I said, I had a chat with Kieran and said, "I'm going to sort of go out on my own." And at that stage, there was some boxes that opened up at Caulfield, and I took them and took the leap of going out on my own.
So you're brave, then you make a decision to go out on your own. By the way, we're with Nick Ryan here. This is Nick Ryan, your story on RSN Central. It's a big punt as a young trainer. A lot of overheads. You got to back yourself. Not only we all know, and you probably had that. You had that self-belief that you could train a horse, but it's much more than just being able to train a horse to be a successful horse trainer these days.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very daunting, taking that step and going out on your own. Bills, overheads, Sunday mornings, no staff, afternoons, no staff. It's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears till you eventually, you know, over time, grow, and get able to put on another staff, make things easier. It's just a lot of hard work.
Do you enjoy the PR side of being a horse trainer?
Look, I don't mind it. Doesn't faze me at all. Yeah, I think it's very important, obviously, in this day and age, you know, everyone wants to know what their horse is doing, and it's very important.
So how big are you now?
I'd say I'd have about 45 to 50 horses on the books and 28 boxes at Flemington.
So did you, when you first got those boxes there at Caulfield, did you have a two-year plan, three-year plan? Did you think that you would be where you are today?
No, definitely not. No. Definitely not. I just thought I'd start off and have a bit of fun, see if I could train a winner and trade one or two overseas and see where it went. But probably the last 2 years, 18 months, I've really set some goals now and been very driven. I've got some good team of staff now. Toby Lakes, my foreman, he's a young bloke. He's very very driven. I think really going to have a red hot crack now.
We'll take a quick break here with Gareth Hall and Nick Ryan. This is Nick Ryan's Your Story here on RSN Central. I want to ask him about Muhammad Dias, because this was the horse that really put you on the map, Nick. And I also want to ask you what turned you to get that extra motivation and that drive to become the trainer that you are today. So when it went from basically being fun to a business now that you really want to have a fair dinkum crack at. You're with Gareth Hall. This is RSN Central. Welcome back to RSN Central. This is part two of Nick Ryan's Your Story. Nick, tell us about where it went, when it went from, as you pointed out on a few times during this interview, that it went from being fun to, well, I want it to still to be fun in a way, but these are my goals, these are my aspirations. I want to mix it with the Team Hawkses and Kieran Maher and all of the McAvoys and probably Moronis, etc. You want to be at the top of the list when it comes to Melbourne trainers.
Well, to be honest, it's a lot of probably my first 50 runners. I can't remember the stats exactly, but it wasn't that fun. It's not that fun going the races and getting beat and then driving home and, you know, late nights and whatnot. So I thought I'd want to be better at this, and I want to get better, and I want to learn, and I worked harder and harder and harder, and then, you know, a little bit of success here and success there, and it just sort of went from there, and I think that's what I am. I think I'm a hard worker and always want to better myself.
What's been the secret then for you getting better? Is it just, it can't be, it can't just be hard work. Hard work obviously helps a lot, but what do you think that the difference is from you being the trainer that you were to the trainer that you are now?
Well, I think the move to Melbourne, to Caulfield, to Flemington, just being around these big stables and seeing how these good trainers, what they do. Like my time at Caulfield, I loved it. Obviously, I'm ride a lot of my track work, so I'm not in the trainer's hut as much, but I still used to get out there a fair bit. But just being around the Moody's, the Mars, the Mick Prices, now I'm at Flemington and I've got, there's Godolphin and you've got the Wallers and the Moronis, Hawks and Co, yeah. Ellerton, Zara, Hazes, O'Brien, yeah. Hayes. And I'm always looking, you're always looking to see what people are doing and what, how they do this and how they do that. And I'm very open for change, and if something doesn't work, we'll try something else. I'm not sort of, I'm not just one way street. I'm always open to experiment stuff, yeah. And I think that's one way that you get better. And you don't know until you go the races what you're doing is working. So don't be. I was never afraid to run them. I think Kieran told me that one day. Just don't be frightened, just go the races, and you know, if that doesn't work, well, you try something else. And I tell you, like, I've made many a mistakes,
yeah,
and still do, but you just got to tweak this and tweak that until you get it right.
Every horse is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, some need more work, some need less work, for sure.
Yeah, tell us about Muhammad Dias and how special he is to you.
Yeah, he's been somewhat of a revelation, really. My stepfather picked him out at the Vobis Gold. Geez, I can't remember what year it was.
9 years ago now.
He's getting on a bit. He was a $24,000 yearling purchase. And funny story, the reason when I was riding, I used to ride a horse for Matty Allerton.
Sorry, yeah.
Casual pass. And Muhammad Ayas is dam is a half to casual pass. And my stepfather thought he was a spitting image of casual pass. So we brought him. And if you look back, there are many similarities, a big chestnut horse, big stride, whatnot. So, yeah, he was purchased and syndicated. My godfather helped me syndicate him, John Cole, whose father trained at Flemington, Les Cole. So he helped me syndicate him, and there's about 20 to 25 owners in him, great group of owners, and it's just been a fantastic ride. What's he won 12 races now and 1.2 million. Yeah,
he's been an extraordinary horse. He's been king of the Vobis, that great breeders scheme and owner scheme there by Racing Victoria. He's really made full use of that.
Yeah, he has. He's going to run him one in 2 weeks as well. But there's still plenty left in him too. He's just an old warrior. Touchwood, he's very sound, and he's got a fair bit of racing left in him.
You just mentioned about the syndications and getting people into horses. You can't be a successful stable if you're not able to go and buy horses at the sales and then have the owners to support you. Hmm. How have you enjoyed that process of building up your clientele? And has that been easy? Tell us about how you've approached that as a young trainer.
Look, no, it's not easy at all. It's been a gradual build up. I've had a lot of good owners and a lot of support from some great people, but I think only now, probably the last 6 to 12 months, I'm starting to get some confidence to go to the sales and buy some horses because of the good clientele and my good owner space around me at the moment.
So how did that all establish? Did you have to go and sell yourself, or when you started to have success, they came to you?
Yeah, look, they certainly, after success helps, and I've had to sell myself a little bit, but you know, I only started off buying cheap horses. You know, Muhammad Ayas, 20,000. I think Columbus Circle, he was a very promising horse, broke down at Caulfield one day. He was 60,000, Express Pass 30,000. And it's only probably the last 12 months where I've been able to, you know, up the ante a little bit and start purchasing some more expensive horses.
We've mentioned this a couple of times, but you're 34 years of age and you had stables at Caulfield, but now you've got a box, or you've got to set up at Flemington.
Yeah.
Do you have to pinch yourself when you rock up to work at the place that you grew up at, watching your grandfather train horses there from Flemington? But it's not easy to get stables there at Flemington.
No, it's it's quite surreal. As I say, I was a very happy man when I got that news, is an understatement. So yeah, as my grandfather trained there, and I did my apprenticeship there, and now to be set up there in my own right training is amazing.
You finished second 6 times as a jockey in Group 1s, and then I was watching the Rupert Clark there the other day, and geez, dice roll, he was so close. Does that tell us you've been so close, but I guess so far and away?
Yeah, it reminded me of a Lingy.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up.
I think it hurt more too. And a Lingy was, I think, what'd she jump? $1.20 in the My Classic in 2004, 2005. That hurt more the other day. He was, look, it only fuels the fire to get back and try and win one.
And you're not far away, mate.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah. And so 45 is the number that you got right now. How big do you want to get? What's your dreams and aspirations going forward?
Well, look, I'm not sure. I've always been cautious not to grow too quick because I want to, you know, still very hands-on, and I want to be very sort of boutique somewhat. But I think we're starting to grow now. And as I said, I've got some really good young staff, Toby Lake. There's some boys there that have been with me for 3 years now that are very loyal. Aaron Mitchell's just come on board.
He's a good young kid.
Starting full-time on Tuesday. So I think you got to build the foundations first, and with starting with the team around you, and the team that I've got, It's very exciting going forward.
So do you treat yourself like a football coach then, in a way, to make sure you get the best out of your team? And I guess that you want to employ people too that try and get the best out of yourself.
Absolutely, and I think you've got to lead from the front, and as I said, very hands on. You've got to lead by example. I'm riding work every morning, and I'm there every afternoon, and you've got to steer the ship.
Do you think that's a big advantage, riding work?
That's probably my biggest advantage, biggest attribute, being a trainer, for sure. Yeah. I can jump on any one of my horses any given day and see how it's feeling, and and see how they're going, really. Yeah.
And you'll continue to do that as long as your body allows you to?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I'm a fish out of water in the trainer side anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, stay fit and get good enjoyment out of it.
And why do you love the thoroughbred so much?
It's just in my blood, really.
Are they easy to work out?
Some aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've all got their different characters.
Oh, for sure. Yep. They're pretty pretty smart, and every one of them is different. But if you look at them enough, you will.
Yeah. Man, it's been a lot of fun, and you should be so proud with the story that you've been able to live so far, and there's been ups and downs. But, geez, you're doing a great job. I guess the last one before I let you leave is that, what advice would you give to a young jockey right now? Young Nick Ryan. And do you think one day you would like to take in a young rider as an apprentice?
For sure. It's one thing that I'd always said that I would take on an apprentice. There's a few kids that I've helped along the way already.
Yeah.
But to have an apprentice of my own, that's one thing that I certainly would entertain. The advice for a jockey, young jockey, it's very very hard caper in getting into, and it's very cutthroat. But I think the harder you work, the luckier you'll get.
And if you could be in the room with one trainer to sit down and ask whatever you want, and they could give them, they could give you all of their secrets, who would that one trainer be?
Dead or alive?
Both.
I think Bart Cummings.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
That's a no-brainer. I was very lucky enough to ride a little bit for him. I ran third in a Blue Diamond for him on Wonderful World. Intriguing human being.
Yep. You're an intriguing human being, mate. There's no doubt about that. Keep on doing what you're doing. And I'm sure that Group 1's just around the corner, but it's been a wonderful start to your training career. And before you know it, mate, you'll be at the top of the premiership, I've got no doubt. Thanks for your time, and thanks for spending your time and telling your story on RSN Central's Your Story. Well done, mate.
Cheers, Gareth.